Welcome to installment 265 of Sefer Mitzvahs from the Rambam. Today's portion contains one commandment, Prohibition 250, the prohibition of Einah, of cheating someone financially.
This commandment is known in Hebrew as Einah, or specifically Einah's Momein, meaning cheating in business, and derived from the book of Leviticus chapter 25, verse 14. Which describes business transactions and states at the end of the verse, Al teinu ish es ochiv, that one person should not cheat another. And as the Rambam brings from the Sifra, this cheating here is referred to monetary cheating, monetary fraud, as explained in the fourth chapter of the Talmudic tractate Bava Metzia. In his legal code, the Rambam describes what actually constitutes fraud. At what point is a person considered to have been cheated from his money? And the Rambam explains that this depends on what the normal market price of the object is. How much is the object worth? And how much has he overcharged the buyer? The key number here is 1/6. Should he cheat the buyer by more than 1/6, then the deal is off. The deal is nullified. There was no sale. In other words, the law of cheating, of fraud, is not only that one is required to return the money, but should the sale have been conducted in a fraudulent manner, then the entire sale is invalid. It is completely no good and completely nullified, should it be more than 1/6. Should it be less than 1/6 of the value? Then the Rambam says that the sale is a valid sale, because less than 1/6 is an amount that people are accustomed to ignore, that this is something which is unimportant and does not affect the deal. Let's say it should be exactly 1/6. In that case, the deal is valid, and the sale is binding on both parties. However, the seller is required to return to the buyer the sixth which he has overcharged. Only then is the deal necessarily binding. Let's say that he has overcharged the buyer by more than 1/6. The Rambam says, actually, that even though the sale is not technically valid, nevertheless the buyer has the choice that once he is made aware of his ability to nullify the deal, then he is allowed to validate the deal and to accept it the way it is. He has no right to ask back for the money he was overcharged, since it was more than 1/6. However, should he wish, he can hold on to the object for the amount which he originally paid for it. This amount of 1/6, however, applies only if we're dealing with a case of market value. Let's say it should be dealing with a measurement or a number of articles. Let's say a person, for example, has purchased 100 pairs of shoes, and instead the seller only gave him 99. In that case, the seller would be violating the prohibition of fraud, even though it's less than 1/6, because since there was a specific number which we're dealing with, for numbers, people care even about an amount smaller than 1/6, and even one is something which is fraudulent in nature. And so, too, if it's something which can be weighed or can be measured, such as a length of cloth or an amount of food, a weight of food, in such a case, fraud would be involved even with much less than 1/6, even a smaller amount. As we mentioned, the reason for 1/6 being brought as a measure is because less than 1/6, it is assumed that the buyer didn't care about such a small amount and ignored the difference. However, the Alter Rebbe tells us in the Shulchan Aruch, in his Code of Jewish Law, that this is a Safek D'oraisa, that since we're dealing with a biblical prohibition, It is only a doubt that perhaps the person did not willingly overpay. But the other way is also a possibility. Perhaps the person thought that this was the value of the object, and therefore he was in reality cheated. He is a victim of a fraudulent transaction. He thought the object, for example, was worth $50, and he paid $50, whereas in reality it was only worth $45. Therefore, the Alter Rebbe says that it is proper, l'chadchila, that a person should notify of an overcharging, even if it is much less, even if it is a pruta, a tiny amount, because perhaps the person unwittingly paid this extra amount and wasn't merely ignoring the difference. And since we are dealing with a biblical prohibition, one must be careful to ensure that he has not cheated and sold it for more than the market value, even by a tiny amount. The Rambam tells us that this prohibition of cheating applies not only to the seller, it applies to the buyer as well. Let's say, for example, the buyer knows that the true value of an object is a certain amount, and the seller is unaware, and the buyer underpays for the object. In secular terms, this might be seen as a bargain, a metzia. The person has found an object which is worth much more and bought it at a lower price. However, according to the Torah, the laws of einah, of fraud, apply. And just as the seller is prohibited from making more than a 1/6 profit, so too the buyer is prohibited from getting more than a 1/6 bargain. But he also must pay for the market value of the object. However, if the object is much cheaper, or in the case of the seller, he is selling it for much more, in this case, it is obvious to all involved that there is another reason for wanting to change it from the regular market price. For example, if the seller is selling an object which is normally worth $10 for $100, it is apparent to everybody that he's not trying to cheat anyone. He obviously has a special attachment to this object, and because of its dearness to him, he does not want to sell it. And so too, should he sell a $100 object for $10, it's impossible that such a mistake could be made out of his ignorance. Obviously, he must be in dire need of cash, and therefore is selling even expensive objects for a lower amount of money. And since he desires then to sell it for this lower price, then in that case, it would not be considered a nah. It would not be considered fraud, since both parties are aware of their real value, even though they have not explicitly said so. As long as they are both aware, then the deal can be transacted, and it is valid. Included in this prohibition could be considered laws governing the notification of certain defects in an object to the buyer. Let's say, for example, that an animal has a certain blemish or a certain injury or disease. In this case, the seller is required to notify the buyer. And this not only applies to transactions between Jews, but even should a Jew sell to a non-Jew, he is forbidden from fooling him and forbidden from cheating him. And if there is a blemish, he is required to notify the non-Jew. And stealing money from a non-Jew is also a biblical prohibition, as we explained in the laws of Gzela. Therefore, it is strictly prohibited. In Jewish writings, various philosophical works, it is explained that this prohibition against fraud points out the importance of a person's belief in God. It is not merely a convenient or intellectually satisfying law, but someone who is fraudulent is actually rebelling and denying God's providential care for the world. He thinks in order to survive, he should take more than what he normally deserves. And he thinks that at the time that he's doing so, that Hashem is not observing his act, and he will be able to get away with it unscathed. However, Hashem is oimed alav, uvechen kloyes v'lev, that he sees the act of every single person, and even searches out, literally, the kidneys and the heart, the person's innermost feelings and thoughts, that our thoughts are revealed before God, just as our actions and speech are. And therefore, this belief will lead us to be scrupulously honest in our business transactions. It is explained in Chassidic philosophy that there is another type of eina, another type of fraud going on, in a more general sense. This eina, this fraud, is the creation of the world, since the world exists in a fraudulent manner. The truth is that the entire universe consists solely of godliness, Hashem Echad, that there is nothing outside of God's existence. However, the world is conducting a fraud. When the world was created, it took upon an appearance of an independent existence aside from Hashem. It appears to be the only yesh, the only true existence. However, the truth of the matter is that the world is completely nullified, completely subservient and subject, and even included in God himself. And the true existence, the Yesh HaMiti, in the expression of Chassidus, is Hashem himself, that the world is in reality Ayin, is nothing. As the expression is brought, Yesh Me'ayin, the world was created something from nothing. Why do we call the world something, and higher levels of godliness nothing? Because we feel ourselves to be something. However, godliness is something we cannot perceive. For us, it is nothing. It is as if it does not exist. However, there is a higher level. Above this ayin, there is the real yesh. The essence of God is the only true existence. And as far as this level of godliness is concerned, anything below that is ayin. It's the existence it feels and it senses is completely nullified, completely subject and subservient to the intense godliness and the absolute revelation of God. Therefore, the mere existence of the world is in itself a type of eina, a type of fraud. Our task here in this world is to unmask the fraud, uncover the fraud, and show that the world is not an independent existence for itself. Rather, it is in truth godliness. As the saying goes, that God took from the spiritual and made from a spiritual existence a physical existence. And the Jewish people have to do the opposite. We have been given a physical existence, and we must make from the physical and take it and convert it to the spiritual, thereby revealing the godliness, which is the true existence of the entire universe. Thank you for tuning in to Sefer Mitzvahs, a project of Sichas in English. For more information or to sponsor one of the installments, contact Sichas in English at area code 718-778-5436. That's 718-778-5436. And please join us again tomorrow.